Hello, and welcome to our podcast today on Empathy is My Superpower. So my name is Lori Hughes, and I'm a faculty fellow with our Faculty Resource Center, and I'm sitting here with my colleague and good friend, Dr. Simone Andrade. And Simone last week gave a great talk on teaching with empathy. And we had a wonderful hour together. She shared with us some great information, and we're going to, in this podcast, kind of revisit her talk briefly. We want to talk about, you know, what some of the strategies we have implemented as empaths in our classes. We both teach English, and we want to talk about, you know, what it means to offer ourselves up in the classroom as you know, opening up vulnerability. And with that also comes some setting boundaries. And so we want to address that as well today, and avoiding burnout, because it's a very big thing. So Simone, welcome.
Hi, Lori.
Thank you so much for talking with me today. Can you tell the folks a little bit about why empathy is your superpower?
Well, it's funny. I always thought, when I discovered that I was what they would call an empath, it was actually after a conversation with our former reference librarian, Melissa Heselmeyer. She and I, we were always talking about our true colors that were blues. And we laughed at what all that meant, what all that entailed, and how sensitive she and I tended to be. So we would go to weekly lunches so that we could kind of decompress and let go of all of our sensitivities with each other in a safe space. But then I discovered what that meant, that I was an empath. And sometimes it meant that I could walk into a room and I'd feel tension and it would make me sick. You know, I just would feel the weight of it immediately. And sometimes it would be that I would just be hyper aware of things, of other people's emotions. So I could notice somebody's eyes were sitting a little heavier, and I just needed to know what was the cause of it. So it started with those kinds of things, those like very alert observations. And I realized that I think that's my strength. That's my superpower, right? And I think that probably contributes to why I feel so confident in a classroom. But after I offered to do the presentation and I started doing research, I also discovered that it was probably a really big factor in how tired I am every day. And so I did a ton of research, and I realized a lot of important boundaries that we could set. And I thought, wow, this is really important information for all of us, because those of us who are really connected to our students, it's really difficult for us to let it go once we get home. And so I just think it's so important that we do allow work to be work and home to be home. And that's just not always possible when empathy is your superpower.
It is definitely a challenge. And when you have empathy at the forefront, you know, and however you choose to display it, you know, it can be just maybe a student coming up to you with a personal story or something that they're going through. You feel that. You feel every bit of that to your core. And you want to help them, and you know, you want to solve it. And I think as teachers, we want to fix it. We want to be the ones to say, all right, I see you, and now let me help you to get, we can do that together. And there's a lot of stress that comes with that, because we have a lot of things we have to do. You know, we have outcomes we have to teach, and papers to grade and read.
Well, and one of the sources that I found when I was researching for my presentation talked about the weight of self-disclosure. And, you know, I know I feel it. I know you feel it. Yep. But I never understood the science behind it, right? Yeah. And so now I get why it felt so heavy. And that is that empaths, we feel it, and then we want to own it.
Yes.
And on one level, that's kind of a selfish way of thinking, right?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't stressful walking in and feeling tension. It was stressful not knowing the cause of the tension, and then being 100% convinced that it was either because of something I did or it was something I could fix.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And not all tension, not all stress, not all trauma is yours. And correct. So empathy for me now needs to be what the theorists say, which is, or the experts say, which is that it's an imagined experience. Mm-hmm. You know, me recognizing and empathizing with other people doesn't mean that it's now my problem or my trauma. And that's enough.
Right.
You know, it's not expected nor acceptable for me to take that person's trauma as my own.
And own it. Right. It's not.
Right.
It's not your story.
Yeah. And so that realization has been, it's only been a few weeks, but it's been liberating, honestly.
It takes a lot of pressure off.
Yeah.
For sure.
And one of the videos that we saw during my presentation made the distinction between empathic burnout and compassion fatigue.
Let's talk about that for a second.
That was an eye-opener.
Yeah.
And if you guys didn't watch the presentation, there was a video, or the videos weren't working. One of the videos was from the Ohio School Board of Education. And this specialist identified that empathy tends to be a self-minded reaction and compassion tends to be an other-minded reaction. And so empathic burnout is one where you're trying to take on other people's problems as your own. And so then you weigh it down, you become weighed down by it, and you're kind of frozen. Like you just, it stops there.
Yep.
But compassion is one where it's action minded. So you say, I see this problem, let's see how we can correct it. And compassion fatigue comes from you trying to be the one that fixes everything. But compassion is about being action-minded. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be the sole fixer of everybody's problems.
Right.
So one of the things that they highlight is look at the experts all over campus. You know, who can we lean on that know how to do that better than we do? Just because we're empathetic doesn't mean that we know how to counsel.
Right.
Doesn't mean that we can locate housing options or funding options or jobs.
Right.
Or help with abuse or any number of things that our students come self-disclose.
Yes.
Right.
And I think as English professors, we hear those stories a lot because they do offer so much of their own personal selves through their writing and through their discoveries. And we are that safe space for them, for many of our students. And so I think we do experience that. Something I heard you say in your presentation, and I've done this too in my class, is invite guests mm-hmm. to come and take part, even for just, you know, a 10-minute little segment of our classes. And can you talk a little about who you invite to come in, and I can share too?
Yes. So last semester I got up to 14 presentations, and I have narrowed that down. I've let my students vote on their top four this semester because that's a lot of course time, instructional time that I was worth
it's important time,
but also
sure.
So the first presentation is always counselors, mm-hmm. and we have a bunch of wonderful counselors here. We're very lucky here as a campus to have so many full-time counselors, but I've gone through my own personal traumas, and the person I have gone to personally is Terry Alborez.
Yes.
And I trust her very much.
Yes.
And she has such a calming presence.
She does.
And I trust her. And so my students are often looking for a friendly face who can help them emotionally. And even if Terry doesn't have a ton of time, it's her presence itself is so comforting and calming.
Yes.
And so I ask her to come to class so that my students, even if only just see me and Terry interact with each other, so that they can see the trusting relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I also invite Neil Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
Neil actually counsels my daughter, my older daughter. He's advised her through all of her higher education steps. And he and I have had a long-standing professional relationship and a strong friendship. And what I love about him and the way he approaches students is that he will set aside time. He'll schedule appointments and then do follow-up appointments. And there's not this feeling of, okay, this is all I can do for you. You know, go on. It's, wait a second, this isn't working. Let's try something else.
Yep.
Or he really tries to get to know the students on lots of levels to make sure that they're making choices and making next steps that are going to be what's best for them. And so they usually come coordinate and they come together so that my students can meet them and see the face to go with the names that I mentioned, but also see the way that I interact, because part of that whole empathy thing is that I want to help with networking. And I feel like if I can demonstrate trusting, comfortable relationships with people, that it kind of transfers to them, you know?
Yep.
So it's them. I used to invite Lynette Dempsey. She's not here anymore, but she was the coordinator for Maverick Men of Distinction. And I also invite the food pantry. So Michelle will come to class this semester. And sometimes Marie Thibodeau comes to talk about the track center and the career closets. Mm-hmm. And this year they ask specifically for the food pantry counseling, student life, and financial aid.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So they'll all be coming. And it just kind of gives them like, well, I hate to say it, but it kind of gives them a leg up on yeah. everybody else, because they've already started the networking portion of their college education. So
that is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're giving them the vote of what's most important to you. And, you know, that's huge.
Yeah.
They feel a say-so in that.
It does reveal a lot that the food pantry was like number one, though. So yeah, that's on my radar.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. That's important. Yeah. Because it does reveal, you know, how you can navigate the rest of the semester mm-hmm. and help those students out. You know, we talked a lot too in your presentation that we can be taken advantage of, and you know, there's some strategies for that too. So let's talk about that a little bit if you know.
You and I have helped a lot with new faculty orientation.
Yep.
And one of the things that I've always tried to stress, obviously from learned experience, is that as faculty we can say no.
Yep.
And that, you know, feeling comfortable saying no is probably one of our best, most important skills to prevent burnout.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that simple.
No.
You know,
it's hard.
I think some of us, we see what other people are doing and it's hard. There's that imposter syndrome. There's seeing how busy other people are and thinking, oh, maybe I'm not busy enough. Mm-hmm. Then there's the resentment comes from, but they're not doing anything. Why am I doing so much?
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And so I revised my approach to that, you know, dusting off your no thing as saying, you know, we have so much autonomy as faculty. We're lucky in yeah. that we can pick and choose which projects we focus our energy on.
Yeah.
And I think being aware of your why is just so useful. If you know that this is a strength and that you're here for these reasons, then focus your energy on projects that associate with that, you know. Yeah. I am terrible in meetings. I think I might die if I had to sit through curriculum team. It's just not my strength.
Mm-hmm.
But I love being with students and I love the advocacy component of our job.
Yes.
I love building relationships. Yes. I love hiring committees. Yes. I love working across the curriculum. Right. I love all of those types of things. And so I try to focus my, allow time in my workload to focus on those types of things. And if it doesn't fit into some of those things, I try to say no. You know, I used yeah. to have these three things. I would say, can I do this while still avoiding bureaucracy?
Mm-hmm.
Can I see the immediate connection to students? And can I put everything that I need to put into this as much as I need? Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
Do
yes.
I have the time and the energy that is necessary to do this to the utmost of my potential?
Exactly, like bandwidth.
Right? Right.
Yeah.
And so if I can't answer yes to all of those things, I just don't have time for it.
That's really smart. And I'm glad that you said it's okay to say no, because it is. And it's something I'm still learning. And
well, and I think the thing is, we love it here.
Yeah.
Right? We just do. Love our jobs. We love each other. And we love our students. And there's just love, 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 love. Right?
Lots of love.
And I think that can be appealing to people who are trying to coordinate committees.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
And because we love so many people here and we yeah. love so much about what we do, it's hard for us to say no to people we love.
Right.
But sometimes I think that can be taken advantage of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So setting boundaries, you know, learning to say no, you know, is going to help with the burnout.
Yeah, for sure.
Every day.
And no isn't a bad word.
And no is not a bad word.
No.
And, you know, one of the last things I'd love to talk about a little bit is that idea of community, because you mentioned that is very important. How you build that in your classroom, how you build it with your colleagues. What are some of the ways that that faculty who are listening and staff who are listening can seek out those communities to build?
Well, first, I'd like to say if we have a faculty or staff member who's been there as long as we have, who's not suffered any sort of burnout or exhaustion, I mean, congratulations, you know?
Yeah.
It's quite a feat.
Yes.
I feel like I just felt it for my first time probably a year or two ago. I never felt it until a year or two ago. And I feel like that's a win, you know? But I think that that wouldn't have been possible had I not developed very strong relationships here on campus that are trusting relationships.
Yes.
And ones that I can lean on in my times of weakness. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the people who know me know that Michelle Ritchie and I are very good friends here. And it's a friendship that's been built out of mutual respect and love. But we've been lucky in that our friendship has translated to different work-based relationships and partnerships too. And mm-hmm. I think if we hadn't figured out a way to do that, mm-hmm. the lows of our lives that we both encountered over the last few years would have been insurmountable, you know?
Absolutely.
Her father passed away a few years ago, and we were in the middle of a learning community, and she had just taken over the Center for Civic Engagement. And so that was something, that was a weight I could take for her.
Yes.
You know, when we, when a lot of things had happened to me all in a short year with health issues with both of my parents and different things like that, mm-hmm. Having her here to carry my weight a little bit was really helpful. But it's beyond just one person, you know. Right. I don't think I realized the importance of having more than one person here.
Right.
More than a few people here until my dear friend Christina passed away last February. You know, she had asked me to play with the band, and I was excited, a little nervous about doing it. And then we were about a month in, and she passed away suddenly. Mm. And a lot of us got together and realized that our biggest regret was that we didn't dedicate enough time to each other, mm-hmm. you know, and that we weren't going to have that regret anymore. And so from that loss, a lot of us have bonded, and we now make time for each other. And yes, I know that may sound cheesy to some people, because I'm talking about friendships here. I'm not talking about just colleagues. I'm talking about real deep-seated friendships that yes. I've gained from working here.
Sure.
And those friendships, because teaching is so personal to me, those friendships are personal, and this job is personal. And having that squad that I can rely on when I'm struggling with a decision, or I'm struggling with a student, or I don't know what to do with something, it's just been a game changer, mm-hmm. you know? Making sure that I'm on committees with people that I want to spend, like, I really feel value added to my day.
Right.
You know? Like, this is great. Thank you for enriching my life today.
Yes.
Right? And it's just like today, you and I talked, we were both nervous about this, but yep. knowing that we were doing it together was like, okay, whew.
Yeah.
So we feel good. You know, sorry for everybody if this turned out like awful, but we feel great about it.
We love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I told Simone, you know, it's my first podcast, so I wanted to do that with a friend. And that's exactly how it feels here, and just a conversation with a friend. And so I'm glad you mentioned the communities. We, you know, one of the groups that I invite into my class too is the communities and schools.
Oh, yeah.
And our partnerships. And we're going to have a podcast with them in March and coming up, and also another workshop. And so, you know, it's looking for those opportunities, those ways to connect, because my goodness, so much of our time is spent here.
Oh my gosh. And community and schools, what a great
yes
program to have here.
oh my gosh, we're so lucky to have that.
I mean, their ability to find resources for students. And my favorite thing about them is that the answer is never no.
Yeah.
It's always, I'm not sure. Give me some time. I'll get back to you. And then they do.
And they do. And yeah. They follow through.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And so so be on the listen for that. That's going to be coming up here in March after spring break. So, Simone, this was fantastic. She and I can go on for another several hours, but we have to wrap it up. But thank you for joining us, and I'd love to talk to you again sometime.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.